Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome once again to another special edition of the For Your Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. Yes, round three of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup as we review these wonderful matches in the third round as these clubs that got together, of course, from the amateur levels, the U.S. Adult Soccer Association, NPSL, the PDL, USL Pro League, and now finally the NASL teams get involved and some fantastic matches that happened in round three, which was, you just got to say that there was a lot of action going on, a lot of action to discuss. I mean, we're talking about matches that either prolonged for a very long time, just getting into the start of the penalty round shootout, barely getting to the penalty round shootout, or not even bothering with extra time. And you just got to say that this was an absolutely fantastic round to begin. And what can you say? The magic of the cup. You saw what happened with what's going on in England with the FA Cup, and now you see what's going on with the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Some fantastic action back and forth, and just one of those moments where you don't even know how it's going to end. And talking about you don't know how it's going to end, how about what happened down in Pittsburgh, the Riverhounds advancing to the fourth round and once again facing a very, very dangerous side in the RWB Adria, as the Riverhounds hold on during second half, extra time, as they find a way to win it. And it's the former New York Red Bull, the former FC New York forward, Johnny Arteaga, who makes it the big win with a great goal in the 112th minute after a 2-2 draw in regulation time. And it looked like Pittsburgh was going to do something. Danny Earls in the 40th minute, and then Derek Huffman in the 44th to level it at one at half. Taylor Bond puts Adria ahead with a goal in the 62nd minute. Collins John made it 2-2 in the 80th. And then it all happened in extra time, the second half of extra time. Johnny Arteaga in the 112th minute does something special, does something spectacular. And that was a huge, huge goal to put them ahead. Carolina Railhawks doing all their damage in the first half against the Charlotte Eagles of the USL Pro League. Nazim Al-Badawi in the 14th minute made it 1-0. First half stoppage time, Jun Marquez made it 2-0. And that is all that she wrote as the Railhawks advance into the fourth round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Other big games here, Harrisburg. It was basically a full-out destruction. Morgan Langley in the 8th minute got it going. 31st minute, Jimmy McLaughlin gets his first, and then his second 6 minutes later as he converts a penalty. Now, even though Baltimore pulled one back in the 76th minute, Morgan Langley gets his second of the match in the 80th minute. And that would be the end of that. Baltimore would pull another one back, but it would be too little too late. Harrisburg City Islanders advancing to the fourth round, again, beating Baltimore Bohemians by a final of 4-2. And, of course, they'll be facing on the road against their top affiliate, or the top club, actually, the Philadelphia Union. So we'll see what happens in there, as it should be awesome to watch that happening, even though technically it's not supposed to happen. Now, Orlando City in the USL Pro League hosting their I-4 international Interstate 4 rivals, Tampa Bay Rowdies, but it would be Orlando City that would just take care of everything. 4-1 was the final score there. Kevin Molina with a brace in the 10th and 40th minute. Corey Herzog in the 20th and Adama Mbengwa in the 25th minute. Wagner for Tampa pulled one back in the 45th, but it wasn't enough as Orlando City advanced into the fourth round, as well as their under-23 side. And we'll have Paul Shaw, head coach of Orlando City's under-23 side, with us later on in the show. It's a taped interview. How about this? It's just been unbelievable, been going on. Arizona United, as they advance again, and they do it in extra time against Oklahoma City Energy, it would be two late goals, one from John Okafor for Arizona to take the lead, but then Kyle Gregg in the 90th minute for Oklahoma City forces extra time, and everything and anything goes on in extra time. Now, Kadeem Dakries gets the big goal in the 112th minute to put Arizona United ahead and through into the next round with that great goal. They will be without Joey Dillon, who got sent off in the 114th minute. And before all that, Oklahoma City was playing a man down for the rest of the second half after the 47th minute. Michael Thomas got a red card, sent off. Say goodbye. So long. So that was very interesting to see what was going on in that game. And just some more great games here moving on forward. The LA Galaxy 2 team from the USL Pro League taking on PSA Elite. Nothing in regulation, nothing in extra time. It went into penalties. Only one goal was scored. That was, or shall I say, one penalty was converted by the LA Galaxy 2 side. Laurent Courtois was the only man to convert. And then all of a sudden, Galaxy 2 could not do anything right, either saved or missed by Aurus, Jack McBean, and Jameson IV. Here comes PSA Elite as Preciado, who got his penalty stopped or missed, and then Sean Sahagian, the German Simmons for PSA Elite, they all convert afterwards on their penalties, and the LA Galaxy's USL Pro side is now eliminated as PSA Elite. They're going to go through into the fourth round. And a lot of fun and interesting stuff going on. How about Minnesota United FC? Right now, top of the table in the spring season, leading the NASL, they get one goal from Chris Ramirez against the Des Moines Menaces under-23 squad in the U.S. Adult Soccer Association. And Minnesota United FC will advance into the fourth round. Just some great games. And my God, talking about great games. Here you have Fort Lauderdale leading at the moment 2-0. Gonzalo de Mojica in the 8th and Yaquil Perez in the 12th. And all of a sudden, Lionel Brown, who's the goalkeeper for Fort Lauderdale, by accident, obviously, he handled the ball outside the area, and that's an automatic sending off. And Fort Lauderdale forced to go down to 10 men by taking out a top player and putting in the backup keeper. And then near the end of the first half, Irving for Laredo advances a goal to make it 2-1 at half. And then all of a sudden, you're wondering, does the Laredo Heat find a way to move forward? Does Laredo find a way to maybe even tie this match and then force into penalties or at least extra time? And Alvarado made it 2-2 in the 86th minute. And then all of a sudden, a penalty was called for the Laredo Heat. Orlando Bayona was asked to take the penalty. He was asked to go to the spot and attempt to convert in second half stoppage time. And then all of a sudden, Lockhart Stadium was quiet as Bayona converted the penalty. If you watched the stream, which was basically the play-by-play announcer for the Laredo Heat, he wasn't going quiet. He was going bananas. My God. A star is born. Multilingual and everything. Great job by that gentleman calling the match for the Laredo Heat supporters and for those fans, for anyone that was interested in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Just some fantastic stuff going on. Fantastic stuff going on here in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. We've had ourselves a destruction, though. There were two destructions, actually, but this one was really a big destruction. Sacramento Republic, in their second U.S. Open Cup match, destroying the Fresno Fuego 6-0. And unfortunately for Fresno, they went down a man, Alfred Edmonds, not only booked in the 34th minute, but sent off in the 37th. It wasn't a second booking. It was basically a straight red to take him off. And then all of a sudden, here comes Sacramento putting in goals like nobody's business. Nemanja Vukovic in the 45th. Justin Braun in the 52nd. Tommy Stew in the 61st. Rodrigo Lopez, 76th. And another one in the 81st. And then the final one, the sixth one in the 89th. 6-0, Sacramento Republic over the Fresno Fuego of the PDL. And right now, Preki, who is the manager of this Sacramento Republic side, is doing a pretty good job right now with this side in Open Cup play. This is absolutely fantastic stuff going on. And then, of course, we thought we were going to have ourselves another upset, as the New York Greek American Atlas were on the road taking on the Richmond Kickers. It was a 21st-minute goal by former Metro star Chris Megalaudis that converted. Bit of a weather delay with lightning and everything else going on, but they had a lead going into the half, and then Richmond finally found a way to turn the engines on after they were able to restart the game. George Davis leveled it in the 48th minute, and then it was William Yombi in the 81st minute, giving the Richmond Kickers the right to advance to go into the fourth round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, as once again, my friends, the U.S. Open Cup is that type of tournament, that type of action that you'll never see. Maybe the playoffs, maybe the Stanley Cup playoffs in hockey, but to be honest with you, you'll never ever see great action like you've seen in this Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. It is going to be spectacular. It's going to be awesome. No matter what you say, no matter how you say it, no matter what you do with it, you're going to see some great soccer, some great football. Go to those fields, those stadiums that are nearby. Go and check it out. I know it's going to be a little tougher now because of the World Cup that's coming, because round four will be on its way. But I'm telling you right now, if you have an opportunity to go to wherever these games are going to be, soccer stadium, college stadium rental, athletic field stadium rental, whatever rental, go, 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 go to these Open Cup matches. You will enjoy yourself. You'll have a fun time. There could be a stinker, but it could be a lot of action. You never know. Go and enjoy it. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got a very good show for you tonight. Joining me, a late introduction, a late one, but I'm glad he's able to join us later on tonight. James Holt from the Crocketeers down in San Antonio will be joining us. Taped conversations with Brendan Doherty, who covers the Rochester Rhinos. At the moment, they're playing a league match tonight because they played on Tuesday. So he'll be joining us on a taped interview. The head coach of the Orlando City under-23 side in a taped conversation, Paul Shaw, will be joining us, former England player who's played for Arsenal and many other clubs in England, as well as Cesar Diaz, who covers the New York Cosmos for Latino Sports. And, of course, This is Cosmos Country. The head coach of the Indy 11, Jürgen Sommer, will be joining us later on in the show as well. But my first guest tonight is a gentleman that covers and calls the games in the NASL for the Atlanta Silverbacks, and that gentleman is, of course, none other than Ryan Martin. Ryan, thank you for the time, and welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Not a problem at all. So, obviously, I just want to set the scenario here with this Open Cup matchup with, of course, Chattanooga FC from the NPSL, a very tough opponent. Obviously, we're not going to mince words here, a very tough opponent. It's not a long travel from Atlanta going into Tennessee, and something must have been said by Eric Winalda, because Atlanta actually put five past Chattanooga to go into the fourth round.
Yeah, and on one hand, I think we could see that it was some of the momentum that came from the win this past weekend at Edmonton that carried over into that, which was certainly good, because I think given some of the form shown before the Edmonton game with the way the games at Fort Lauderdale and Carolina had gone, maybe everybody was wondering exactly how this cup tie would go. Because as you said, even though Chattanooga is a couple of steps down the ladder in playing in NPSL, they definitely have some good crowds that can get behind them, and they're pretty good at that level. So as cup ties go, you know, it was certainly, I think, a relief to a lot of people to put that kind of performance out there, and also to not have that be a more strenuous game than it had to be with such a big game coming up this weekend against Minnesota at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you want to make sure you take care of business in these type of cup ties, you really, really want to take care of business. And my goodness, just some fantastic chances. 3-0 in the first half, you get two more in the second half. But talk about Junior Burgos for a minute here, because he's the one who got himself the brace in the 17th and the 42nd minute. What type of a player has he been for Atlanta, and what has the coaching staff been trying to do to get him motivated? Or if it's not a motivation problem, it's a luck problem.
You know, it's interesting with Burgos, because we've so far seen some real flashes out of him, some of what he can do. I especially think back to the loss to San Antonio when he came on as a second-half substitute, and was by and large the main catalyst of that comeback that just about saw Atlanta snatch a point late on. He's a guy who I think maybe it's tough to find a real spot for him, because I think his natural position is as more of that attacking midfielder sitting in behind the front line. But Atlanta has also quite a few attacking options already in that midfield. So even for some of the work that he has shown, he's really found playing time to be hard to come by. He's had a couple of starts, if memory serves me correctly, in the spring, a couple of sub appearances. But with the outing that he had against Chattanooga, and sure, we do have to take some things maybe with a grain of salt considering the level of competition, but he again reminded everybody what he can do. Obviously, we saw him score from range. We saw him score from a free kick. We know he can deliver from set pieces. Again, referencing back to that San Antonio game, he demonstrated that fantastically. So maybe he's going to be pushing for some more playing time going forward, maybe as soon as this weekend. We'll see, because Atlanta is going to have a couple of injury issues to deal with, one being Pablo Cruz, who, of course, normally plays as either that attacking midfielder or out wide when he is healthy. He's going to be back on the mid now probably for the next couple of weeks. So maybe Burgos will find his way back into the lineup that way, by way of both the injury to Cruz and his own performances.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, still, though, I mean, it's a relief in a certain way, because they can perform, you know, like this, and you hope, obviously, there's two matches remaining right now in the spring season for the NESL, but then again, there's always the fall season, so we'll see what happens. But You would have to say right now, I mean, it sounds like everyone's motivated to do well and to advance deep into this Open Cup season if possible.
I think so. And, of course, putting all of my own allegiances and biases aside as much as I can, trying to speak objectively here, when you look at the Silverbacks and what they've done this spring season, we've seen some good, some bad, and ugly. And maybe you would expect that considering they've turned over half of the roster from last season's trophy-winning side. But even in that good, bad, and ugly, we've seen them be dangerous at times. The attacking acumen, and maybe this is no surprise considering Eric Wynalda's influence, we know he wants them to get forward and score plenty of goals. The attacking acumen is there, whether it's a Dion McCauley, who, of course, you know, scored goals really for fun during this past World Cup qualifying cycle with Belize, whether it's a guy like Jaime Chavez, who has come out of nowhere in the eyes of a lot of people, and he's really asserting himself as being that quintessential number nine target forward, or a guy like Kwadwo Poku, who started out the season up front. He's now playing as that attacking midfielder in behind the front line, and we've already seen he caused Edmonton lots of problems this weekend. He's got the athleticism, make some of those runs and just pick the defense apart. And then Junior Sandoval out wide, he's been fantastic this season as well. Borfor Carr, who has been missing so far all spring through his recovery after hernia surgery, he's coming back to health. Long story short, I do think the Silverbacks can be a problematic team, even for MLS teams, which I guess we'll find that out in a couple of weeks' time, won't we? But the goals are there. The problem is going to be, I don't want to say problem, maybe wrong choice of word there, but the question is going to be, can Atlanta be solid enough at the back when we get to that game against Real Salt Lake in a couple of weeks? Because, again, you know, the game against Chattanooga was Atlanta's first clean sheet of the season. They've yet to keep one in the league. They almost kept one against Ottawa. They gave up a goal in the 96th minute there to lose the clean sheet. But any chance they have a deep run into the Open Cup is going to really hinge upon what they can do at the pack. They can probably put two on a lot of MLS teams, but the question is going to be, are they going to give up three in the process?
Yeah, that's the big question there. And don't forget, you got yourself a big matchup on this Saturday night, taking on Minnesota United over at Silverback Stadium, and that's going to be a tough definitely a tough nut to crack, because obviously for Minnesota, top of the table is on the line. If they can hold on and win, I guess it's still a little bit more smooth sailing for Minnesota than, of course, Atlanta wants to play spoiler there in league play.
Yeah, and that's going to be an interesting game. There's a bit of a poetic edge to that game. It was last season in the spring season finale that the Silverbacks actually clinch the spring title in Minnesota. Now here Minnesota is 12 months later in a position to do the same thing at Atlanta. So maybe, I guess, with that said, when these two teams play, somebody's about to clinch a trophy. I don't know. But the match in and of itself is going to be really interesting because, as I just mentioned, there have been some inconsistencies in the back with the Silverbacks, especially on set pieces. That's really been their undoing. And Minnesota's dealing with some big selection problems in the back, too. After this last game they had with Carolina, Thiago went out with an injury. I'm not sure if he's going to be fit. I haven't gotten the final confirmation there of his absence or not. Then, of course, you had Cristiano Diaz, who was sent off in that match as things, you know, really got kind of hairy in his last few minutes against Carolina. So we'll probably see Aaron Pichkolan drop back from defensive midfield where he's been playing all season. But, of course, remember last season he made NASL best 11 as a center back. So they're not losing anything there. But the question is going to be who's going to play alongside him. And, of course, Kevin Venegas, their usual right back, he's been nursing an injury too. So he might miss out as well. So long story short, they may be missing three out of four members of their regular back line, again, going against the side in Atlanta who can score goals. I mentioned 3-2 just a second ago about that being a possibility for Atlanta versus Real Salt Lake upcoming. Maybe we'll see that this weekend as well, because we know Minnesota has especially at the NASL level, they have such a wealth of creative forces in that midfield. And, you know, you look at a lot of NASL rosters, whether this year or over the last couple of years, and maybe an NASL team, the top NASL teams, could put out a good, solid starting midfield, first-choice midfield. But if they had a couple of injuries, that would quickly go by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota all season been rotating out in the midfield to an extent that you just would not believe an NASL team would be able to do. You've had a guy who's been such a fantastic performer in the league, and Simone Brachialello, who's been in and out of the lineup. That's unheard of. Just about any other team in the league, he'd be one of the first names on the team sheet. A guy like Jamie Watson, who was obviously brought in from Orlando City after a couple of good seasons there, he's, you know, had to find his time in the squad rotation too that Manny Lagos has implemented this season. And a guy like Daniel Mendez, who has obviously had his time over in Europe, and he's come in and has had to, you know, take his minutes where he could. And now you're bringing in a guy like Richard Garcia, who, of course, as maybe some people remember, was actually a part of Australia's 2010 World Cup team. People might remember him from his time at Hull as well. He's just been signed in the last couple of weeks, so now you have another attacking force in that midfield. And, of course, Christian Ramirez. In the preseason, when Campos went down, everybody thought that, well, maybe Minnesota has seen their chances go by the wayside as well, but he's been a revelation for them after putting up some decent numbers last year with Charlotte. But he played that target forward role well, but he's also sprinkled in some creativity and some of the sublime that you wouldn't have expected from him at all. And suddenly you look at him, you think, well, is he one of the best strikers in the league? So, yeah, Minnesota, even with some of the absences they're going to have this weekend, they are still going to be in a position to at least do their part to clinch the spring. And, of course, they'll wait to see what happens with San Antonio and with Fort Lauderdale and the Cosmos. So definitely a big, big occasion. And the first leg of three consecutive home games now, including the Real Salt Lake game.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the Real Salt Lake. They will be without Kyle Beckerman, and they will be without Nick Raimondo on duty for the U.S. national team. And even though
and Alvaro Tabarillo will be missing out as well.
But I don't know if you've heard, fractured foot.
Right, exactly. So they're going to be without him either way, but
now
that dreaded metatarsal, you know, he might be out a little bit longer than they would have expected just for the World Cup.
So how do you think Eric Wynalda is going to play this hand that's dealt to him right now, not just because it's Real Salt Lake, but a little bit weaker than they normally would be in these types of situations?
It definitely makes it a bit more winnable. With that said, the cupboard certainly isn't bare when we're talking about Real Salt Lake, even with some of those very notable household names being out. I think Wynalda, as would be typical for him, you live and die by the sword. I think they're going to come out and push Real Salt Lake with those absences in mind. And with the way things are looking right now, it looks like the game's probably going to be a sellout. You know you're going to have a raucous crowd behind you. Why not try to take advantage of that kind of home crowd? You know, Silverbacks Park, when it's packed to the rafters like it probably will be for that Real Salt Lake game, it can be really one of the loudest crowds of 5,000 people you can find. But, of course, as I said, Real Salt Lake's still deep. They're still going to be in a position to cause the Silverbacks lots of problems. Obviously, we've got, like, Joel Plata. I wouldn't be surprised to see Luke Mulholland play a large part in this game. You know, he's obviously having come over from Tampa Bay this season, and he's had some good moments here in the early going of the MLS season, and I told a lot of people he would, so hopefully those people are listening right now. anyway, but even as somewhat depleted as Real Salt Lake will be, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting, and I think, you know, win or lose for the Silverbacks, yeah, I think you just have to hope that they're able to go out there and put on a bit of a show. And I say that not not to be resigned in kind of moral victories and say that, all right, well, we pushed him to the wire. But there's a lot of build-up to this game. You know, we have to keep in mind that we're not just getting, no offense to other clubs in MLS, but we're not just getting any old MLS team in. We're getting one of the standard bearers over last 2 years. So big occasion. And I wouldn't rule the Silverbacks out of it. I know some people say, of course you wouldn't, considering, but I really wouldn't. It's going to be very, very interesting.
Absolutely. Well, Ryan, good luck in the rest of the NASL spring season. Good luck in the fourth round, and that will be on June 14th over at Silverbacks Park. Have a good night, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. It's Ryan Martin, play-by-play voice of the Atlanta Silverbacks, as they get themselves a big win, big, big win going forward, and just an absolute fun time anytime there's an Open Cup match. And, of course, when a lower-level side takes on an MLS club. Just awaiting head coach of the Indy 11 in Jorgen Sommer. It's been a bit of a rough time, obviously, for the Indy 11 in their first ever season in the NASL. Of course, they are in the spring season at the moment. Not looking good at the moment on the league calendar or in the league table. Of course, Indy 11 at the moment, still without a win in seven games with three draws and four ties. But they finally get their first win of their history, and it comes in the U.S. Open Cup. Joining me now is head coach Jorgen Sommer. Jorgen, thank you so much for the opportunity, and welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Very happy to have you on here. Before we get into this match against the Dayton Dutch Lions, you can tell with U.S. Soccer's game of the round, stream of the round, that everyone in Indianapolis, including yourself, hungry for the first ever win for this club, and it just comes finally against Dayton. Just explain the gigantic King Kong-sized ape off your backs.
Yeah, it's great. The team performed very well. We came out really bright in the obviously the U.S. Open Cup match, where we're looking forward to that. It's a great competition for our guys to be involved and to get the brand of the club out there as well, and going against a crew here shortly. But no, it was a great win. We had a good performance a week before in New York from the guys. Really dug in on the road to dig away a point 1-1. New York, obviously one of the, in our opinion, one of the best teams in the league, and difficult place to go play. So, yeah, we have a young franchise, a young team, and coming out and getting a win like that, especially with five goals, was great for the home fans, and just building the camaraderie and the energy amongst the group.
Yeah, absolutely. What energy, my God. Blake Smith with a hat trick in this match. I mean, I'm watching the stream, and you're seeing Blake Smith just pounding the ball in the back of the net. Obviously, Mike Ambersley made it 3-0 before halftime. Just absolutely fun stuff to see Blake Smith going bananas on the field, letting the Brickyard Battalion go nuts, the entire stadium going nuts. That must have been just a great thing to see with Blake Smith and his hat trick in that match against Dayton.
No, it really was. It's been great to have Blake with us. He's on loan from Montreal. Somebody we've tracked early on in preseason, and his qualities are exactly what we're looking for and the kind of style of play we want to have here in Indy. Great with the ball at his feet, loves to take people on, you know, very creative, very attacking-minded player, and just a very fluid finisher. And he took his opportunities really well that he had in front of goal, two assists as well. So we could have been happier for him on the night, but just very smooth. He's a big competitor too. He looks like maybe kind of a smaller, wiry guy, but he's a handful. He's got lots of energy, lots of pace, and I think our fans will really enjoy watching him play the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's a good fit for you. And we said before already, Mike Ambersley made it 3-0 before half. He's obviously one of those NASL journeyman type of players, found a home with Indy 11, and how he fits your style out on the pitch. And it just seems like Mike Ambersley, it doesn't matter what he does, it's always the right thing.
Yeah, Mike's got a real, you know, he's a very experienced player, has a real nose for the game, gives us a lot of high-quality possession in moments where we're trying to build the attack and get into the final third, and just really finds a keen way of just kind of putting himself in the right spot in around the box. So Mike is has gotten better from week to week, and again, excited for him and the goal he put in there. Obviously, that takes the result at that time, you know, to a very comfortable lead for us. So, no, Mike's been a you know, one of the older, more experienced players in the group, and he just comes out and works hard as a pro every day. So he has a real trickle-down effect for the remainder of the group.
Absolutely, and just as soon as the second half begins, Dylan Mayers makes it 4-0. But I have to ask, Dayton was able to pull two back. Aaron Schoenfeld made it 4-1 on the penalty in the 64th minute. Dayton does get a second in the 76th. Were you feeling a little concerned at that particular point in time, or did you just felt like it's too late in the match, you're going to coast through this and finish off with a win?
No, I think the way the season's gone for us thus far, Daniel, we can never feel that way. Yeah, we definitely got a little bit uneasy there as it got to 4-2, and there was still quite a bit of time left in the match, and as you know, one more goal can make it anybody's game at that point. So, you know, coaching points for us, you know, afterwards were, you know, having the group understanding how to finish teams off, how to keep possession of the ball, not kind of take ourselves out of harm's way at that point. We had kind of done the heavy lifting to get the score line to where it was, and then maybe took our focus off the game for a short spell of, you know, 10 to 15 minutes, which, you know, give credit to Dayton Dutch Lions. They came back and continue to push and continue to fight through, you know, the course of the, you know, the 90 minutes of the game. But, again, Blake, we moved him a little bit more inside and put him underneath the striker and found a nice little seam to kind of run in to get behind with his pace and his finishing ability. We knew he would be special on the night, and he didn't disappoint.
Absolutely. I want to ask about you at this moment. Obviously, this is your first season as a head coach of any club in U.S. professional soccer. If seeing a picture of you right now, you still have any of that hair left on your head, or are you holding on okay?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's graying a little bit here and there, but we just feel really fortunate here in Indianapolis. We got a great soccer state, soccer community. You look at Notre Dame and Indiana winning the last two national championships, being part of that myself at IU. Just tremendous support from our season ticket holders, the Brickyard Battalion. I think Peter Wilt has done a tremendous job with the promotion of the team, or Sal Ozdemir, our owner, with bringing the team to Indy. Sold out crowds for every home game that we've had in the regular season. It's just been fantastic. It's a great celebration of the game here in Indy. Obviously, we've got a big mountain to climb with building a new franchise, not only on the field, off the field. We've got a great front office that are just working tirelessly in the community, and with our corporate sponsorship, great support there. So it's work in progress, but there's not a day, I don't think anyone in the organization doesn't get up, your toes are tapping, and you're excited to kind of get out there with the team and represent the brand. So we're still building it as we go. We know we've got a long way to go, but definitely the foundation and the support for the team is here, and I think that is very clear with the players as they come to match day on Saturday. It's a fun week of training as guys are fighting to keep shirts and stay in the roster and be in the starting 11, because the atmosphere at our match has just been a second to none in the league, and we continue to build on that week after week and hopefully year after year here.
Absolutely. I agree with you about Peter Wilt. He's got the magic touch when it comes to building clubs. He did it with the Chicago Fire and MLS, and he's doing it with the Indy 11 now in the NASL. I don't know what Peter does, but he does it so well, and I'll have to admit, you guys are probably grateful that Peter's doing it with the Indy 11 as well as in Indianapolis.
No, we are. He's a great listener, and I think what Peter's philosophy, he puts the fans and the fan experience at the top of the totem pole, so to speak, and everything we do is kind of built around that. And he's just a man of the people. He really understands what the fans, what they want to see, the experience they want to have at the game, and he's done a tremendous job to deliver on that product. And we'll continue to do the best we can on the field as we kind of build our club and bring our young players along and look for, you know, experienced players to come in and help us. We still have a ways to to grow in that department. But Peter is just a tireless worker, and you know, he's not afraid to get his hands dirty and roll up his sleeves and kind of get out there on the street with everybody and you know, get some honest feedback and implement that within the organization. So we couldn't thank him enough for the energy that he's put into the team, and I think that's being being shown by the type of support that, and the atmosphere that we have at our games. It's been great.
Absolutely. This is my final question to you. Obviously, you're going to be going to Columbus Crew Stadium on June 17th, taking on the Columbus Crew. I don't know how well you know Greg Berhalter, who's the head coach of the Crew, but what are you expecting in this fourth-round game against the Crew over in Ohio again?
You know, Daniel, I think the game is going to be played over at Akron, at Akron University. It's a kind of a neutral site for them as well. I think it's a little bit of a barnstorming type game for them. I know Greg, he was coming into the national team as I was going out, so to speak, you know, just a touch and age above him. But I know he's assembled quite a great group of guys at the Crew and has gotten off to a very good start at the beginning of the season here with Columbus. We saw him in preseason down in Florida, and he was graceful enough to kind of let us play a preseason friendly with him. Really, we're looking within our own organization first, you know, coaching our guys and trying to get the coaching points across that we want to our group. You know, we know that they have a higher caliber, you know, group of players within the Crew organization, but we're going to come out and play the best soccer that we can play and be as competitive as we can be. It's going to be a great experience nonetheless for us and our guys to go up against an MLS side like the Crew and try to grind out a result and try to make it a competitive match. And obviously we want to win as well. We'd like to move on and use that as another opportunity for, you know, our fans and our teams to celebrate the Indy 11 this season.
Absolutely. Jürgen, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate it. You're always welcome to come back anytime you want. Good luck with the rest of the spring season, and good luck in the fall as well as the Open Cup.
Cool. Thanks, Daniel. All the best. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too. Take care. And that's Jürgen Sommer, the head coach of the Indy 11, as they will move on into the fourth round to take on the Columbus Crew in Ohio. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, just some great moments, great stuff going on here, talking about the U.S. Open Cup. It's a lot of exciting things going on here, tons of excitement going on here with what's going on with the Indy 11 and as well as many of these other clubs. And, of course, as everyone knows, MLS will now get involved. It will go from 16 in this U.S. Open Cup tournament into 18 next year, over with the Open Cup in the 2015 edition. So it's going to be a lot of exciting things, a lot of great stuff going on. And I got to tell you, I am just so excited to see what's going to happen next year with the Open Cup. Will we remain the same thing with five rounds? Will we have more teams entering in certain rounds as well? We will find out when those things are going on, of course, but we got to make sure that we finish up strong with the 2014 edition of the Open Cup. This is the 101st edition of the U.S. Open Cup, celebrating 100 years as we get ready to talk about all these great games happening here at the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup Round 3 review show. A lot of excitement, a lot of fun. It's just been absolutely incredible. My next guest at the moment is not here live. Did tape the conversation as he is currently involved with the Rhinos in a USL Pro League match against the Richmond Kickers over at Salem Stadium. But I did have a moment to talk to Brandon Doherty, who covers the Rochester Rhinos over in upstate New York and western New York. And he had this to say about this third-round match against a very tough side, even though they're in the PDL, the Reading United AC, very, very tough opponent in the PDL, in the lower levels of U.S. soccer. Brendan Doherty, ladies and gentlemen.
And once again, everyone, this is the U.S. Open Cup Round 3 Review Show here on the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show. And, of course, there's a team that's advancing to round four as the Rochester Rhinos of the USL Pro League defeat a very tough Reading United side. And joining me from Rochester right now, Brendan Doherty. Brendan, thanks again for coming back on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. How's it going?
That's going very good. And I got to tell you, it was a little weird seeing Rochester as the only game from round three in on a Tuesday night when everyone else played on Wednesday. But I think seeing what happens with Rochester right now, and we've talked about the league season hasn't been going well for them, but still, when you go into the Open Cup, it's, you know, it's all hands on deck, and it looks like the boys are going to start channeling that 1990-19.
Yeah, it was a very similar game in a lot of ways to the second-round match against the Western Mass Pioneers. It was not exactly the first-choice lineup, but at the end of the day, the guys got the job done. And we're moving on. And talking to the coach and a couple of players after the game, that was pretty much the sentiment that was echoed in the team. You know, they didn't play as well as the team could have, but they got the result and moving on and put this game behind them and looking on to playing DC.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of bookings in this game from both sides. And, of course, when you got into extra time, Darius Madison got his second yellow of the match and sent off in the 98th minute. And to have Rochester up by a man has in extra time, especially, that must have been a heck of a break for the Rhinos where Madison makes a foolish yellow card.
Yeah, that was definitely a bit of a relief for the team and the fans. You know, from the outset, from the first whistle, both teams were really physical. Both teams were yelling at it. Both teams wanted to win the game. And I think the intensity of the game surprised, you know, not only us in the press box, surprised the fans, and I think surprised the referee. The officiating team didn't really know what to expect from this game. It definitely didn't expect the type of physical game that it ended up being. Madison and Rhino center back, Babacar Diallo, both could have gotten sent off in the last 2 or 3 minutes of regulation. They had been going at it for a while, and both of them were on a booking at that point. So, it was kind of, 50-50 whether Diallo would get sent off first or whether Madison got sent off first, but it worked out for Rochester. And after the sending off, which was in the 98th minute or 97th minute, after that, Reading didn't challenge Rochester at all. They didn't manage a shot on goal or a shot in general for all of extra time. So after the defending off, it really was Rochester's game to win.
Yeah, absolutely. And Colin Rolfe, now out of curiosity, is he related to Chris Rolfe from the DC United?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
they look kind of similar, but I'm not sure.
Well, I guess we're going to have to do some investigative reporting. No, I'm just joking around. But, you got to say that this was a fantastic game, obviously going back and forth. And Reading did take that early lead in second half in regulation. Nick Surkamp made it 1-0 Reading. But, boy, Johnny Mendoza quickly equalizing in the next minute made the game a lot more interesting than it probably would have been.
Yeah, that's true. In a USL Pro match when Rochester went down to Richmond, Rochester scored in like the last minute of regulation, and then Richmond came back and scored 14 seconds later. That's pretty much what happened in this game. From the kickoff, there was one pass out wide to Alex Dixon. Dixon ran into the corner, came off the end line, and put a low ball into the center. Mendoza, as he had been doing all game, just showed up in every place he needed to be, all over the field. He was there to slide through the middle and poke the ball past Alex Bono in Redding's goal.
Yeah, it's just...
Everybody was still writing the Twitter updates for Redding's goal when Rochester scored.
Ooh.
So.
Ooh. Don't you just love Twitter? You can, before you even hit the send button, you can just quickly fix up the tweet before you send it.
Yeah.
But anyway, Once again, Rochester does it in extra time, like they did it to Western Mass when they took the victory. Is it something about going into extra time that maybe? I mean, it's more of a crapshoot, obviously, when you go into extra time because you don't know who's going to get the winner. But did it feel like there was confidence in Salem Stadium that Rochester was going to win this game in extra time?
It was kind of nervy at the end of regulation because Reading had some of their best sustained pressure right before the end of regulation. And then it was pretty 50-50 through midfield for the first 5-6 minutes of extra time. But after the red card to Darius Madison, it was pretty much Rochester camping out in Reading's half, just trying to find a way to break through Reading's defense. But, to put it in a little bit of a historical context, heading into this week's match, Rochester was undefeated, 15-0-1 against lower division sides. The one tie came against Pittsburgh when Pittsburgh was in the third division and Rochester was in the second division in 2009. And then Rochester was also 12-0 against amateur sides in the Cup, so they've never lost to an amateur side. But five of those games against amateur teams, including the game 2 weeks ago that you mentioned, that went to extra time against Western Mass Pioneers, there were five of those games that went to extra time. And then of the 12 games against amateur sides, nine of those games were one-goal games. So, even though Rochester has this historical clout in the U.S. Open Cup, 9 out of 12 games against amateur sides have been one goal games. So even though Rochester has somewhat of a tradition of close games against amateur sides, they've also have a tradition of winning every single game against an amateur side. So yes, Rochester just likes to keep us on the edge of their seats.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely was on the edge of everyone's seat. So now fourth round is beckoning for Rochester, as you will be hosting DC United back at Salem Stadium, and that match will be played on June 17th. The quirky scheduling in this fourth round because the World Cup will be played at the same time. I guess my question to you is this. What are you expecting from D.C. in this match? Because you are facing the defending U.S. Open Cup champions.
Yeah, I guess it's tough to really predict which D.C. United side will show up, whether it's the D.C. United MLS side that's, I think, second in the East right now, or the D.C. United side of last year, which was, I think, the worst team in the history of MLS. Or close to it.
Yep.
Whichever side shows up, this is the type of game that the Rhinos organization wants to have, that wants to host, that wants to showcase. And this is the type of game that players on Rochester, since they're on 1 or 2 year contracts, most of them, this is the type of game where they can really showcase what they do individually and try to put themselves in the shop window for other MLS teams. It'll definitely be a difficult match, though. Rochester hasn't beaten an MLS side in the Cup since 2009, when they beat Columbus and then lost in the semifinals to D.C. The Rhinos have lost against the Crew, Chicago, Philadelphia, and last year against New England Revolution at home in their seeding four tournaments. But I think Rochester as a club, and I guess and definitely the players, are itching for a win in this little try to put Rochester back on the map, beating them last
time. Yeah, absolutely. That would be very interesting to see what Rochester is going to do against DC United, who have improved pretty good since the start of the season here in MLS, and one of those surprise sides right now that have seemed to have gotten off to I would have to say maybe a poor start, but they're clicking at the right time and they're starting to look pretty good. But once again, this is going to be a very big matchup. Once again, this is going to be a huge moment for Rochester to try and move into that new fifth round if they do get the win. And it will be at home. So I think it's a good thing for Rochester right now to take on DC. And any surprises we might see from the Rhinos in before this matchup begins on June the 17th?
It's very tough to terms of roster additions?
Roster additions, obviously because of the whole well, let's just put it this way. I don't want to, you know, do the nudge, wink, wink, but, you know, you have some players from the Revolution that could be called in for their Open Cup match, unless there's an agreement that some of those players in Rochester that are tied to the Revs, that you can still keep them.
Yeah, there's been some confusion about a rule in the U.S. Open Cup handbook about the eligibility of players who are on loan from other domestic sides. So because the three players on loan from the Revolution right now, Josimar Sanchez, goalkeeper Luis Sofner, and midfielder Alex Hunley, because those guys are on what's termed long-term loans, they're able to play for the Rhinos in the Open Cup, and Sanchez and Sofner are both cup-tied to Rochester. Sofner played 2 weeks ago, and Sanchez played this week. So Alex Hunley could still be recalled to the Revolution to play for the Revs, but the Revs at this point wouldn't be able to send down a couple of ringers to play DC because they're not on long-term loans.
Mm-hmm.
It would be termed a short-term loan, and those players would be ineligible to play for Rochester.
Right. All right, so listen, let's hope that doesn't happen, and let's hope they stay with Rochester and they face D.C. and they give them a match. Brendan, thank you again. Good luck in round four, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Sounds good. Bye.
Excuse me. Pardon me. Sorry about that. And that's Brendan Doherty covering the Rochester Rhinos all season long in the USL Pro League, as well as their time in the U.S. Open Cup, of course. Rochester Rhinos winning the Open Cup back in 1999 as the first lower-level team to defeat an MLS side in the final, which, of course, was at Columbus Crew Stadium. It was a 2-0 victory for Rochester, which was seen on ESPN back in the day. The only time the U.S. Open Cup has ever been on a major network outside, I guess, Gold TV. So just want to let everyone know that 1 second. Sorry about that. I didn't want you to hear that. But, you know, before we move on with our next guest on the show, I have a little time here. I know the fourth round is going to be played on different days from the 10th of June through the 18th of June during the World Cup. And I know it's not ideal, obviously. You would think that maybe the fifth round, which is now the round of 16, you know, you can tolerate that, obviously. But unfortunately, this is the situation that's been dealt with U.S. soccer. And you just have to say that, you know, they don't want to play these games during the World Cup. But, you know, you knew there would be a problem at least. At least I thought with the MLS schedule with only maybe three sides that are playing in a league game before Thursday, June 11th comes, that the majority of the MLS teams could play on the 10th as well as the 11th for their Open Cup games, and then you can reschedule whatever it is. And if there's any USL Pro team not playing on one of those two dates, they could always reschedule their league game. I mean, it happens all the time in England. You know, when you have Arsenal, they had to reschedule a league game because they had to perform in the FA Cup semifinals in Wembley, and they had to reschedule that game. So, I mean, the USL teams that qualified into the fourth round, they could have rescheduled. I don't think it would have been a big deal if they weren't playing their regularly scheduled games, because at the time, the Open Cup is more important. The Open Cup is a big-time tournament, and obviously you want to play in those types of games. Obviously, it would be nice to set these dates a little more advanced before we get going with some of these, like the World Cup, the Gold Cup, and anything else that's going to be coming, including that special Copa America, that Centenario in 2016 that's going to come. So, you know, like I said before, it's difficult. If they could project the dates a little bit ahead of time, then maybe we can not worry too much about, well, are we going to be able to play these Open Cup games, such and such and so and so. So we'll see what happens, and we shall see how these things do go, that's for sure. As we continue on here, this is the special For Your Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, Round 3 review of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, the 2014 edition, as we get ready to go here, as we move forward, as we go ahead and discuss these great games, wonderful games, as we move on here on the show. Joining me very soon, of course, is a good friend of mine who he's a very, very busy man from within U.S. soccer circles, especially in the U.S. and especially in the New York City area, as we await my good friend Cesar Diaz, as he is very busy going all over the place, Red Bull Arena, Schuert Stadium over at Hofstra in Long Island, and other great places to go, because he was at Belsen Stadium. They had to move the match over in Queens, the home of St. John's. Cesar Diaz joins me, and Cesar, history was made because in the original North American Soccer League, none of the teams played in the U.S. Open Cup. They kind of ignored it, didn't want to be a part of it. And even though the majority of the sides did play in it last year, the Cosmos couldn't, and they finally get their opportunity, and it's a 2-0 win over the Brooklyn Italians.
How are you, my friend? What's going on?
I'm good, my friend. Open Cup, my friend. Open Cup.
I'm excited, man. You know, it was a good win. It was a great win to get underneath our belt. You know, our first win with the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, which, you know, it is the oldest sports tournament in the United States, and you know, it was just great. You know, I mean, I thought we had a decent turnout. I thought the team played well. You know, considering that Marco Senna didn't play, Diomar Diaz didn't play, Roversio didn't play. I thought Okafor stepped up, and you know, Danny Sotelo had a fantastic game. Jimmy Okafor. There we go. And of course, you know, and right now I think Jimmy Maurer has done a great job as goalkeeper. You know, so.
Oh, absolutely. Jimmy Okafor obviously is getting an opportunity here in a big game, obviously, it's a win and you keep on going, lose and you go home, and there's another goal in the 29th minute. If I butcher his first name, you can go ahead and do whatever you want. I don't care. Hagop Chris Trishian?
Close enough, man. You're talking to the wrong guy about getting the names right, you know, so it sounds good to me, you know. Better you that you get it wrong than me, so go knock yourself out, my friend.
Well,
no, I'm excited, man. I mean, you know, hey, this Cosmos win, it sets up for the match I've been wanting. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it, man. June 14th.
Me.
Schuert University, Schuert Stadium at Hofstra University, Cosmos versus the Red Bulls. I'm excited.
Absolutely.
Man.
Oh, I mean, this is how many Kleenex boxes do you have to wipe that mouth of all that drool?
Don't need it, man. I want pee. It's not even drool. It's foam. You know, I'm pretty much. You know, I'm pretty much ravaging right now, you know. I mean, I'm foaming from the mouth. I'm excited for it. I mean, this is a match that a lot of people need to understand. It doesn't matter what the managers say or who they field, because it's all about bragging rights between both teams' supporters section. So it's going to be the 5 points, really, versus the South Ward. So, Pepke can say, well, it's not that important, blah, blah, blah. Gio can say, hey, whatever. But at the end of the day, though, anybody who's at the game on June 14th, close your eyes for 5 seconds and feel, and because I guarantee you're going to feel the enchanting and chaotic energy hovering throughout Schuert Stadium. It's the match that supporters have been wanting for years. It's finally there. Let's be honest. One supporter section looks at the other and says, hey, you support an energy drink. The other supporter section looks right back and says, hey, you're following a club that's a shell of what it used to be. Am I right or am I wrong?
Oh, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. One side's going to say that. The other side's going to say, well, you're just supporting a T-shirt idea. I mean, that's how it all got started when they came back, the Cosmos. But, boy, you know, see, this is what people, if they don't understand back in the day before, you know, the sport really took off back in 1996, even though the sport took off, did take off in the early, late 70s, early 80s with the Cosmos and the NESL. I mean, there used to be three baseball teams.
Absolutely.
In New York City. The Yankees were in the Bronx. The Yankees are in the Bronx. The New York Giants, who are in San Francisco right now, were in Manhattan across the Harlem River. And, of course, the Dodgers were in Brooklyn before they moved to Los Angeles. I mean, you've got two NFL teams, two NBA teams, technically three NHL teams. It's really two with the Islanders and the Rangers. And, of course, now the Nets back in New York and Brooklyn with the Knicks, you know, there's a lot of chatter. There's a lot of big mouth. There's a lot of arrogance going around. And all you can do, Caesar, especially myself, get your lawn chairs. Make sure you got your special drink with you in hand. Sit back, relax, and allow the jawing to begin.
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait. I mean, and that's where I'm getting at. That's where I've been alluding to. It's all about the bragging rights. As the matches, as it gets closer and closer, things are going to intensify more. I would hate to be on the losing side of it because you're going to have to eat it up. Doesn't matter what you defend. It doesn't matter what you say. You can throw back, well, we're in the first division. You can say, hey, well, we won our league championship. Hey. It's not going to matter because at the end of the day, whoever picks up that first victory between the Cosmos and the Red Bulls, their first professional match victory, they own the bragging rights. They own the bragging rights until the next time they meet, which is more likely going to be another U.S. Open Cup. So I'm excited for it. I mean, these are the type of matches that you have to decide. If you're in the tri-state area, as a fan, you can decide, hey, you can be part of the history and show up to the game, or you can read about it. And you and I, we've been to a lot of games together in the past.
Yes, we have.
And you know that it's a whole lot different what's written and what's seen, what's experienced. So I understand, hey, it's a World Cup Saturday, but guess what, though, man? The last two games, whoever's playing, they're not winning the World Cup, so miss those games, you know? The earlier teams are going to be, you know, so miss. Italy's not going to win. Japan's not going to win. You and I know it. So take the night off and go see the Cosmos and the Red Bulls.
Oh, absolutely. Huh? Absolutely. Go on over to Short State.
You know, I mean, the only thing I'm curious about is to see who's going to, who's going to play. That's what I'm excited to. That's what I look forward to seeing. You know, who are the coaches going to start, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Because you don't know. I mean, I understand you said Senna got injured before the Open Cup match against Brooklyn Italians, and some are saying he could be close enough or near 100% fitness for the round four game. I mean, that's going to be really pushing it.
Absolutely, but you know what? I mean, because right now, though, let's be honest. Though, both clubs have to. They're finishing up their last few games before the World Cup break.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes back, though, man. It doesn't. You know, whoever is playing is playing. At the end of the day, what matters most is the win.
Absolutely.
So because I can look at it too. Well, Senna may play. Will Thierry Henry play? The guy doesn't play. You know, he doesn't play on turf. You know.
Well, he doesn't play on the turf fields that are over in New England and Seattle and Vancouver, but he can't. He does play on the one that's in Portland. So if Schuert has that type of turf field.
Everybody plays in Portland, though, man. I mean, it's one of those. That's like the exception to the rule, my friend. Come on.
No. It's not the exception to the rule. It's not that, you Mr. New York Logger, you. You've got too many supporting teams, I'll tell you that much. But
hey, man, I can't help it, man. But you know what, though? It's all consistent. The green is the color, and soccer is the game, my friend. Speaking of which, wasn't it amazing how the Timbers went into Red Bull Arena and in their third attempt finally got that hard-fought victory?
Because they heard you talking about that 75th minute and over jinx.
But you know what, though? But let's be honest, though. whether you like it or not, though, man, how impressive was it that over 200 fans from the Timbers Army and then including also, you know, my fellow loggers and including the Timbers Army East Coast Platoon that showed up for that one game and made a, hey, this is an important game regardless, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, they're all important. That's how I see it. They're all important. You're definitely, absolutely correct on that one. They're very, very important. But, you know, it was interesting, even though the Cosmos never scored anything in the second half and Brooklyn went down to two men, obviously Barone got double yellowed, sent off in the 53rd because I think he got booked and then he jawed away and he got sent off. And then Dees for Brooklyn got his red card in the 82nd minute, even though it was already over by then. You know, this sets up, like you've said, this sets up the fireworks out in Long Island. This sets
Let's
up the fireworks
honest.
At
this
Hofstra
is the
University.
Match that everybody's wanted for a long time.
Yep.
Let's be honest. This is really more of a supporters clash than it is really about the team. The only
mm-hmm.
thing the team is gonna the only thing that both teams have to do is play hard, is try to get the win. But
mm-hmm.
it goes back. It's very simple. Who's going to own the bragging rights? Who's going to be able to say, hey, we are the best New York team? Because, like I said, after the game, it doesn't matter. You can bring up every – the losing side can bring up every excuse and every insult. You know how it is, man. That one win speaks volumes.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
That's
I think
true.
About, you know – being a Timbers fan, I think about it. When they lost to Cal FC a few years ago, no matter what the Timbers did afterwards, after that year, for
mm-hmm.
the entire year, the only thing that
mm-hmm.
was brought up, you couldn't beat Cal FC. You couldn't beat Cal FC. You couldn't beat Cal FC. And that's how I'm looking at it. Whoever loses this game, even if the and I'm you know and I may be pushing it a bit, but I you know I'm convinced that even if they were to win their league championship, the other side is going to say, hey, well, you didn't beat us, so technically we're the better team.
Right.
You know?
No, you're right. This is going to be, I mean, you know, you're salivating, foaming, you know, drool pool. This is what you were hoping to see when these situations popped up. And right
Absolutely.
Now you can only get it.
Absolutely. Let's be honest with you, though. You don't. It's one thing to lose. It's another thing to get killed.
That's right.
You know, and this is where I worry a bit about with the Cosmos on it. You know, like, hypothetically speaking, if they were to lose, because it is a possibility, I hope they don't lose that bad. Because if they were to lose that bad, you know, it sort of defeats the whole argument. Well, you said you were, and you know how we are as fans. We would say, well, you said you were ready to play at this level. Clearly, you're
mm-hmm.
not. What would you consider to be a bad loss for the Cosmos?
To be honest with you, I think it would be if the Red Bulls put at least four past them and the Cosmos barely gets one, or if they get their one around second half stoppage time, then it would be a bad loss.
Absolutely. Well, what do you think about 3-1? You think that'll be a bad loss too?
No. Well, it all depends on who gets the one and when it's scored.
Well,
that's the
about
only
like,
thing.
Because this is what I find interesting, though. Mm-hmm. You know, if the Red Bulls were to lose 1-0, it's a loss,
right.
But it's not a bad loss. The same could
mm-hmm.
be said for the Cosmos. If they were to lose 1-0, 2-1, it's not that bad.
No.
But whichever side was to lose by more than two goals, that would be bad.
Yeah.
You were there a few years ago, right, when FC New York played the Red Bulls at Red Bull Arena?
I know.
And you remember how FC New York, for a moment, they led 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
Not to give credit to the Red Bulls, they came back. They ended up winning 2-1. But do you recall those few minutes that it was like, holy cow, really? Did this teammate
yeah,
actually win it?
Yep. at the time, it was a great goal. And at the time, you know, there was those one or two FC New York fans chanting, "We can't hear you," or "We can't hear a thing,"
yeah.
You know, that chant. But then here comes but then here come the Red Bulls. Wayne Rooney's brother gets the winner. Corey Hertzog got the equalizer. Wayne Rooney's brother got the winner, and John Rooney, and that quickly stopped that little. But yeah, no, I'm being honest, Caesar. This is going to be, and I mean, if you want to talk to or call up U.S. Soccer, call up the Open Cup Committee to make this game the stream of the round, Cosmos Red Bulls.
Well,
I mean,
I don't see why they won't do it, though. I mean, it's a Saturday game. That's the bottom line. It's on Saturday. It's not around prime time. I believe the game's at, what, 8:15 or so?
8:30.
There you go, 8:30. So knowing that the Cosmos have One World Sports, knowing that the Red Bulls have MSG, you're telling me that neither station would consider picking up that game, streaming it,
it can be done. It can be done, absolutely.
Now, but will they? I mean, the best thing about it, I'm more curious to hear how Shep is going to call the game, because Shep's the only guy that, you know, he has a significant other, but also has his mistress on the side, you know what I mean?
I kind of knew it, but I didn't know you were going to go there. So that's the thing. But it's still good. It's still funny.
Shep and I are cool, man. You know, Shep and I are cool. I mean, tell Shep, tweet him, call him. I'm sure he'll bring it up to me. But let's call it what it is, though, man. He's got his significant other, but he's also got the mistress on the side. Now, whichever way you want to interpret it, which one, who's who, that's up to you. But I think all of us who are part of the New York, New Jersey soccer scene, we know what's up.
Yep, that's very true. All right, Caesar, I got to get going. And,
all right, my friend.
Thanks again for coming on, and I'll definitely talk to you before this World Cup, Open Cup round.
You have to show up
underway.
At the game. Please, show up.
I'll try. I will try.
No, don't try. Do it. Remember, you can be part of history or you can read about it. You got to be there, all right? And thanks again for having me on your show, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, we'll talk again soon. That's Cesar Diaz, my good friend from Latino Sports, also from This is Cosmos Country Online. Let's go ahead and talk to, actually, the tape conversation of a wacky night in Charleston, South Carolina, the Battery, and Orlando City under 23 side. It was absolutely crazy. It was a 13-round penalty shootout after a 2-2 draw in regulation and extra time. Paul Shaw, head coach of the Orlando City under 23 side.
Daniel Feuerstein once again here on the U.S. Open Cup Round 3 Review Show. I'm very, very excited to talk to a member of the Orlando City coaching staff, but it's not the senior side. No, no, no. Paul Shaw, the head coach of the under-23 team, with a crazy, weird, unbelievable Round 3 Cup tie, defeating the Charleston Battery in penalties after going 2-2 through regulation and extra time. Mr. Shaw, thank you for the time, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, how are you doing?
Very well, very well. But how are you doing? My goodness. What happened at Blackbaud Stadium that it was such an interesting match, and then when it couldn't get decided in regulation or in extra time, penalty round shootout, and it was a long one.
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, the boys did great. I mean, they came out really well. We started the game well, obviously getting a couple of goals, 2-0 up at halftime. You know, we knew it would be a difficult second half. It proved to be that way. You know, Charleston come out and put us under a lot of pressure, got a couple of goals. And then we went to the penalty kicks. As you mentioned, it just went on and on and on. And it was a crazy evening. But all worked out well for us in the end, you know.
Now, I have to ask you this because I watched the stream. Did you know Andrew Brody had that type of a shot on him to just pop the ball up and somehow land right into the net just behind the keeper, because that was an unbelievable chance that, I mean, I don't think we can call it Wayne Rooney-esque. I think we have to call it Andrew Brody-esque, because that was unbelievable.
Yeah, well, the guy's got an awful lot of talent. The good thing with him is he can go both ways, right, left. We actually had a game at the weekend where he scored a very good goal. Probably not, obviously, as good as a goal last night. But, you know, he has got a lot of talent. You know, he's got that, obviously, in his locker. And, you know, he showed it. He showed it on a good stage last night. And I was really pleased for him.
Oh, absolutely. That was a great shot. I mean, that was probably the talking point of the night, coming from anyone that was tweeting on Twitter, social media. I mean, that was just absolutely just brilliant seeing a shot that just comes out of nowhere and converts for your side. I mean, it was just absolutely brilliant.
It was great skill. I mean, obviously, he's going a little bit away from goal, and to be able to know where the goalkeeper is and be able to just dink it over him and land it where he did was obviously great skill and good ability. And he's a really hard-working player with an awful lot of talent. So, you know, he's done very well.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, Charleston came back, Dan Kelly with a brace. He scored. He pulled one back in the 63rd. He got the penalty in the 68th. Were you just thinking, hold on till we get into extra time, or were you really trying to get your boys going to get a third?
Yeah, well, I think the most important thing after they got the second goal was to make sure we didn't concede again. They scored two goals in quick succession, and you know, our guys were pretty tired at that point, and you know, we were still 20 odd minutes from the end of the game, so. It was a time to try and consolidate and to keep them out for a little bit. And the guys did really well at that. And then we obviously managed to stay in the game through extra time and had a couple of little moments ourselves where we could have won it, you know. But it was exciting.
How nerve-wracking was it to get underway with penalties? Because you know as well as everyone else does, I mean, penalty round shootouts can be so nerve-wracking because you pray to God, you know, that your boys can convert it and you hope the keeper doesn't stop it. And Shannon got stopped on the first attempt.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, we just obviously, you never expect penalties to go that far as well, you know, all the way through. And so you're then going into the players that didn't really want to take one in the first place. And that's where it gets pretty nerve-wracking. But the players held their nerve well, you know, actually, and a majority of the penalties were very well taken.
Absolutely, and just keeps on going and going and going till Clajivo gets stopped from your side, and then your keeper stops Cordova's on his penalty, and it just keeps on going, and it just keeps on going.
Exactly. But you don't get many of those penalty kicks like that very often, but, you know, you never seem to really know where it's going to end, but... That works well for us.
Now, out of curiosity, because Abdallah for Charleston was stopped by your keeper when he was the third shooter. His second attempt got stopped. Did you feel before the attempt was taken that this is the guy that your keeper was going to stop? That, look, he didn't convert the first time, and did you believe he wasn't going to convert the second time?
Not really. You never really know. I mean, when it's gone that long, you just expect the unexpected. You never really know what's going to happen. Of course, as I said, there was a few of our guys that, you know, I don't think really wanted to take them, but took good penalties and scored. So you never really know when it goes that far what to expect. You just hope that, obviously, it works out in your favor in the end.
Oh, no, that's absolutely fantastic. It's absolutely brilliant. And you just got to say that, boy, oh boy, you know, what a big moment for your kids, your side, just to pull it off and just keeping everyone on their toes watching that video stream. It's just absolutely brilliant. And now you're going to have a trip to Portland, Oregon to take on the Timbers of Major League Soccer. I mean, if this isn't David versus Goliath-esque, I don't know what is.
No, exactly. And, you know, I mean, just for our guys, it's great. You know, we've been together for probably about 3 weeks now, you know, got this team together. Obviously, a lot of them are playing in college soccer around the country and a lot of them locally here. We've got some of our academy guys playing in the team. So really, as an experience for all those guys, that's the most important thing. You know, they're going to go there, you know, experience something that, you know, they don't think they expected this early in their career. So it's a great moment for them. I just hope they go there and enjoy themselves and put on a good show.
Now, if I can ask you this question, obviously you've played many years over in England. You played for Arsenal. You've played for other clubs, Millwall, Sheffield United, Gillingham, Burnley. Because here in the States, obviously, we're actually grateful to see the FA Cup being broadcasted here in the U.S. If you can tell my listeners and everyone else that's listening to the show, what is it to just be a part of an FA Cup tie or to battle for the National Championship of England as well as now coaching for the National Championship of the United States?
I think these competitions are great. You know, I mean, what it does is it gives everybody an opportunity, and that's the thing for our players. You know, you come into it now, and as I said, it gives them an opportunity if they can win a couple of games to play against, you know, some very good players and some players that are playing at a very high level. So that can then, you know, test themselves against these guys, and that's what it does, and that's why these cup competitions are so important. They're so important for everybody, really, and. You know, it gives you that opportunity that you wouldn't normally have, as obviously through the league season. So, you know, luckily, you know, the players here have taken that opportunity. They've run with it and done as well as they possibly can, and they're going to get the chance now to go somewhere and just enjoy themselves. You know, I'm sure they'll work hard. I'm sure they'll do all the right things. And however the game goes, you know, I think that for them and their development as players, you know, this is a big opportunity for them.
Absolutely. It really, really is. And also, what's it like, because I know you've played for Arsenal for 5 years, and finally, after their last FA Cup championship, Arsene Wenger finally brings home the FA Cup. How happy were you to see finally Arsenal getting a trophy after so long, especially it's the FA Cup?
Yeah, I think it's really important. You know, they've worked. You know, and done really well for a number of years, but not being able to bring home a trophy. And when you're a club like Arsenal, ultimately, however well you do, you do need to win trophies. And you know, people will still say, well, it's only the FA Cup, but you know, it's a trophy for them. You know, hopefully they can build on it now, and they can have another shot of the Champions League and the league, the Premiership next year, be even stronger. And I think for a club like that. The most important thing is for the supporters, you know, that they've won a trophy and they can move forward. So, you know, they can hopefully build on that. I'm sure that they'll bring in some players in the summer, strengthen again, and, you know, hopefully go on and start winning some more silverware now.
Absolutely. And, of course, you faced the New York Red Bulls a couple of years back when you were still with FC New York in the Open Cup. That was a third-round matchup. What was it like to be in that ground in Harrison just to play in an Open Cup match? And your side did take a lead early in the match.
Yeah, I mean, again, like this really for the guys here now, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for the players. Then they went there and they really expressed themselves and you know did pretty well in the game. And like you rightly said, we took a lead and we just couldn't hold on. But I think the important thing is, you know, these guys go there and don't get overawed. Go there, work hard, you know, give their best, and I'm sure they'll do well. And, you know, that was the same then. You know, it's a good opportunity for the players.
Absolutely. Mr. Shaw, thank you very much for the time. I really do appreciate it. Good luck against Portland on June 17th, and let's see if Brody can do another pop-up goal.
I really hope so. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And that is Paul Shaw, the head coach of the under-23 side from Orlando City, as they will fly across the country and take on the Portland Timbers. And that will be on June 17th, 2014, game number 63. Of course, we will preview round four games as we keep on discussing the Open Cup. And boy, oh boy, just a lot of fun. A lot of interesting stuff. I was able to watch that stream as well. Wow, I couldn't believe the goal that was scored by Andrew Brody in first half stoppage time. I mean, he popped the ball up. Nothing special about it until it landed behind the keeper and into the back of the net. I don't know if he missed it in the sun I don't know, maybe he thought the ball wasn't going to go into the net. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, stranger things have happened when you see something like that going on. It just went in there. 2-0 Orlando under 23s, and they took a lead, of course, leveled it all up, and then it went to penalties, and Orlando under 23s moved forward. Talking about a team that went behind at halftime and then took over the lead, of course, the San Antonio Scorpions of the NASL had some problems with North Texas Rayados, and talking about it right now, my good friend James Hope from the Crocketeers. James, thanks for taking the invite, and a hell of a game in round three.
Wow, it was just like deja vu from the year before. We had another amateur team come in last 2013. We had FC Tucson, and you know, we went down in that game and was able to tie it back up, and then lost in penalties. And we were thinking, once again, here we go again. But the second half, totally different story. The first half, it looked like as if it was North Texas Rayados that was the professional team out there. But
yeah,
we were able to turn it around the second half. You know, it's Alan was able to, I don't know what magic he did at halftime, but it certainly fired up the troops. And within 4 minutes of the second half, we were able to get on the board, and within 10 minutes, we were level.
I'll tell you, it's called the swift kick in the rear. That's what it was, because he probably yelled at them to tell them, you listen, well, I mean, you know, North Texas was one of those, you know, teams with an upset special in the last edition of the Open Cup. And, you know, they took out a pretty decent side in the second round. But, you know, I mean, give credit to your head coach. You know, got your guys going, and as you said, got leveled in the 64th. Sione Toure, with some magic, was able to get two goals within 5 minutes.
Toure has been very impressive this year. When he's come on as our super sub a lot this year, and once again, he proved it. You know, on Wednesday night. Also, who had a really great match was Jose Soto. He had two assists, and of course, then was rewarded for his hard work with the penalty. Heads up to Jose Soto for his hard work during that match.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, as you keep on going here, you got a penalty in the 77th minute, and Josue Soto. I mean, was it a calm conversion, or did he try to fake out the keeper?
No. He just very calm and collectively put it in the left side of the net, and shows that and he was rewarded. I mean, two great assists to Walter and to Ray. Coach Allen wanted to make sure that he was given his just due, and he stepped up right up to the penalty spot and put it away.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant. And then you finally get your first win in the Open Cup, obviously after what happened last year. And now you're moving forward in the round four, the MLS round. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, you think you should be the better side. And then a little bit of nerves happen in the first half after you cough up the first two goals of the match. And then, boy, your head coach, Marika, finds a way to get the boys going. And, Marcina gets those guys going, and off they go, and they get a big 4-2 win.
It was very impressive to be able to come back. This is the greatest tournament in the world. Anytime you have a chance that amateur teams and lower division teams can play against the big boys, everyone just gets riled up for it. And hats off to North Texas Rayados for playing their hearts out. The guys give 90-plus minutes to themselves, and it wasn't enough. Once they went up 2-0 lead, they went very defensively. And even when they were down 3-2, stayed very defensively, hoping to get some set pieces and such. But it just wasn't going to be the case for Rayados. And so hats off to them for beating the Austin Aztecs the week before and then coming to San Antonio and doing their best. But we're looking forward now to the next matchup with FC Dallas. We do much better against MLS squads. We're undefeated against those boys. And so
Absolutely.
We're looking forward to going up to Dallas on June 17th.
So how is it? Because obviously, you know, with the other Texas sides, Houston's going to be hosting Laredo. And I haven't seen the draw for the fifth round, but I would have to assume that if San Antonio does defeat Dallas or the other way around, that you're probably going to face either Houston or Laredo. And how tough has Laredo been? Have you, and how close is it to San Antonio? I'm assuming Laredo is a pesky little team out of the PDL.
They certainly are. They've been around for several years and have put together a quality side both in the youth and the amateur divisions. Former Scorpion striker Esteban Bayona is the man who was the man of the match for them. He went down back to Laredo to play with the PDL squad this season and scored the PK, and I think, believe he had another goal. So Laredo is certainly a formidable opponent. I mean, they'll give Houston a run for their money. You know, in the past, Houston has not taken U.S. Open Cup games very seriously. We'll see what Dominic does this year. But certainly we would relish the opportunity to play either one of those squads. But first, we got to get past Dallas. Now, we did tie them in an exhibition match back in March, 1-1 here in San Antonio. So this is going to be the rubber match. We're kind of instituting an old tradition that was done back in the early 70s between the old San Antonio Thunder and at that time the Dallas Tornado. So the winner of this game, we're declaring it to be the winner of the Texas Challenge Cup. So we're looking forward to actually getting a competitive match against SC Dallas and showing Dallas how San Antonio can do some great things.
Obviously, you're going to see Oscar Pareja pull out all the stops there. He's got probably a good young squad, a top-notch squad going out there in the Western Conference of MLS. What do you see from those first two, I guess, exhibitions against FC Dallas that makes you really feel confident that your boys will be ready to go against those guys?
I think we will. Dallas is a little bit in disarray right now. They have some injuries and such, and so it'll be interesting to see how much Oscar puts out his top squad out there and how much it means to him. The game was originally scheduled for June 14th on a Saturday, but they moved it because they play Portland on June 11th in Portland. And so they felt that it wasn't a 3 days rest was not enough. And so, unfortunately, the game has been moved to Tuesday night instead of a Saturday night. But we'll still have a good contingent if we're going up there to Dallas. And it's also the two Toyota Stadiums playing against each other, Toyota Field versus Toyota Stadium. So we'll see how that all turns about. But it's certainly going to be a good match. I know our boys will be up for the challenge, and hopefully we can make a little noise up there in Frisco.
Absolutely. It should be a very entertaining match. I don't know who put the picture up there or the GIF, but apparently it's Frisco over at Toyota Field in
Toyota
Frisco.
Toyota Stadium.
There's just too many Toyota names now with the soccer stadiums. You got Chicago, yours, and Frisco. We got too many. But anyway, Toyota Stadium in Frisco. And then I believe it was a Scorpion supporter holding up his scarf very, very high.
Yes.
Over at Frisco.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an very, very interesting gift. And as they say in the trade, the first shot has been fired.
No, we're willing to. We do believe that we should get the cannon that is given between the Dallas and Houston squads. We'd like to see that cannon find a home here in San Antonio.
I bet it. You have. Is that now? What now? What is that cannon about? Is that because of a Texas rivalry or something else
to do with? It was put together by the supporters of both the Texan Army and the FC Dallas supporters. It's the cannon that goes back and forth between those two divisions. And since it's those are the MLS squads, we feel that we deserve a shot at it. And who knows? Maybe in a few years, San Antonio can join the MLS ranks, and we'll certainly make it a 3-tier Challenge Cup.
You just want to pull the trigger, don't you?
We're ready to go at any time. We've got all the criteria. That's another show. That's a totally another show. But we believe that San Antonio definitely has the demographics to be at the highest level, and the Scorpions have proven it both on and off the pitch.
Oh, absolutely. Watching all those great live streams from the NASL website, including, it's also a local television crew, I believe it's an ABC affiliate over in San Antonio, that has really done a fantastic job covering the Scorpions whenever they're home. Too bad you can't get them on the road, but hopefully one day it'll happen.
Yeah, they do a great job. They're a fantastic group. Ed Lozano and his group does a fantastic job of getting things done, and it's one of the better ones in the league. It certainly is. There's some good ones out there, but I put them up against any of the other NESL commentators in the country.
Absolutely. Just going on with this Open Cup, obviously the whole situation, because now you got yourself once again. I mean, obviously, like we've said many, many times, you always have these preseason games against these MLS teams, and now you got them right where you want them in reality, because now you've gone through North Texas. Yeah, you're going to face one of the big boys in MLS. I mean, what is the strategy now if, let's just say hypothetically, San Antonio does defeat FC Dallas? Obviously, round of 16, I'm assuming it will be either Houston or Laredo. But do you have any aspirations to go all the way into the – not just to win the Open Cup, obviously, but to go into the CONCACAF Champions League? Do you think San Antonio can face some of the big boys in CONCACAF from Central America and possibly also Caribbean countries?
Well, it's always a challenge with any team that has to – with the budgets that leagues have to have and the amount of time that you have to play these tournaments. But, I mean, on any given day, that's what's so beautiful about soccer. We see these upsets. We've seen Wigan and other states in the FA Cup go out and go to the all the way to the final. Anything's possible. And when you have the heart and desire to be a champion – it can be done. It can be done. And so that's what makes the U.S. Open Cup probably one of the greatest tournaments in America.
Absolutely, and it's going strong. It's over 100 years. We're celebrating 100 years of this great tournament since 1914. And, of course, we're in the 101st edition, and all these crazy results just keep on popping up. I mean, what was your take? I don't know if you took a look at some of these past results. I mean, you have – Charleston and Orlando's under-23 team going after 2-2 draw after regulation and extra time, and then they have like a 13-round shootout, and 20 or 21 of them gets converted. I mean, you got 12 from Orlando to under-23 side and 11 from to Charleston side. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy.
I think it says a lot about the – talent in America that is improving. When our under-23s can come out and take on some of the established professionals, it shows that we continue to grow this sport at all levels. You look at our under-15 and under-17s U.S. national teams, and they're winning some big tournaments. Tony Niola was on the radio the other day talking about that he believes that there's not too many teams in the world that his under-15 team can't stand up to. And so we're seeing that, and I think it's great when we can see some of these lower sides come out and put out some quality soccer. And so it makes everyone have to play to their best potential. It's no longer the MLS is here and then the NASL is there, and there's such a big gap. I think those gaps are starting to get a little closer together, and that's a good thing for U.S. soccer.
It really, really is. James, listen, thank you very much for taking the invite late. I'm glad to have you on to talk about San Antonio getting a big win in the third round. Good luck against FC Dallas on June 17th, and best of luck, my friend, into the fifth round.
Appreciate it, Daniel. Anytime.
All right, that's James Hope from the Crocketeers, supporters group of San Antonio Scorpions, as they get ready for their fourth round matchup against FC Dallas. And now it's that time, everybody. It's that time to get ready to talk about the fourth-round matchups. Now, before we talk about the fourth-round matchups, I just want to get everyone to understand what's going on here on the 40 Scenes Fly American Soccer Show. There will be a fourth-round review show during the World Cup review shows that I'll be hosting along with Carter Krishnayer. It will be reduced to an hour, so for this fourth-round match only, in June, the fourth round review show, we will not have it at 2 hours. We'll have it at an hour. I'm forced to do it. It's because of most of these World Cup shows. It's going to be very, very tight. So it's better to just have it at an hour. I'm only able to go up to 2 hours a day. So, and I didn't want to do like in between stuff, you know, between this hour and that hour, but we're going to make it 1 hour for the review show for round four, and that will be around midnight Eastern, June 19th, to talk about the U.S. Open Cup. And then Friday afternoon on June 27th, because the fifth round will be played on Tuesday the 24th and Wednesday the 25th, we're going to have, or I'm going to have, the Round 5 review show on Friday afternoon on June 27th between 1 and 3. And then, of course, I'll be heading over to Red Bull Arena to cover the Red Bulls as the league action gets back, and they'll be hosting Toronto FC that night. So once again, only an hour on Thursday morning at midnight, June 19th, for 1 hour to review the Open Cup Round 4. And then on Friday, the 27th, we will be reviewing the fifth round of the U.S. Open Cup, and that will go back to 2 full hours. So that's where we are at the moment, because there's going to be a lot of stuff going on with the World Cup, as you know, and with all those shows. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I know you guys are ready to go. So here's what's going to happen now as we preview round 4 of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Now, we're going to go by dates here. And just to let everyone know, there'll be 2 matches on June 11th, and they're all late-night West Coast games or in the Central time zone. We're also going to have 3 games on Saturday, June the 14th. We're going to have about 5 or 6, let's just double-check it real quick, games on June the 17th. And that's on a Tuesday. And then we're going to have 5 games on Wednesday, June 18th. So that's the setup. Here is the fourth round schedule for the 2014 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup as we get ready. The 2 matches on June 11th, Wednesday, June 11th, Laredo Heat at the Houston Dynamo at BBVA Compass Stadium. That will be a 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central start. And then the Sacramento Republic will be taking on the San Jose Earthquakes at Kaiser Stadium in San Francisco on June 11th. And that'll be a 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific start time. Saturday, June 14th, Real Salt Lake will be at the Atlanta Silverbacks at Silverbacks Park, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Chivas USA will be at the Carolina Railhawks at Wake Med Soccer Park in Cary. And then, of course, the loudest talking rivalry match right now as the New York Red Bulls travel to Long Island to take on the New York Cosmos at Short Stadium in Hofstra University. And that's at 8:30 p.m. Eastern starting time. Now the games on Tuesday, June the 17th. The Harrisburg City Islanders will travel and take on the Philadelphia Union at PPL Park in Chester at 7 p.m. Eastern. The Indy 11 are going to travel and face the Columbus Crew at First Energy Stadium, which is at the University of Akron in Akron, Ohio, June 17th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. The San Antonio Scorpions travel to Dallas, Frisco, to take on FC Dallas at Toyota Stadium, 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central. Orlando City SC, their first team from the USL Pro, will travel across the country to take on Colorado Rapids over at Dick's Sporting Goods Park over in Commerce City, 9 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Mountain. The Orlando City under-23 squad will be traveling all the way across the country to take on the Portland Timbers at Providence Park in Portland, Oregon. That's a 10:30 p.m. Eastern start time, 7:30 Pacific. And now the rest, round 4 matchup. on Wednesday, June 18th. The New England Revolution will travel to Virginia to take on the Richmond Kickers at Richmond City Stadium at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. The Pittsburgh Riverhounds will be at the Chicago Fire in Toyota Park at Bridgeview, Illinois, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central. Minnesota United FC taking on Sporting Kansas City over at Sporting Park, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central. The PSA Elite of the U.S. Adult Soccer Association will be taking on the Seattle Sounders over at the Starfire Sports Complex in Tukwila, Washington, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific start time. And finally, the Los Angeles Galaxy taking on the Arizona United SC over at the Peoria Sports Complex in Peoria, Arizona, 10:30 p.m. start time Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific. These are the games right now that are going to be exciting to watch, and let's hope every single game, all of the 32 games that we have here in the U.S. Open Cup, round four, let's hope every single game will be streamed so we can all watch them, we can all have fun with them, and we can all enjoy the National Championship of U.S. Soccer, because this is going to be exciting. This is going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait to see what's going to happen when all these matches, 32 teams, 16 games, it's all going to be on the line as everyone from MLS to the NASL to the USL Pro to the PDL are fighting for becoming the national champion of American soccer. It's going to be exciting. This is going to be fantastic. This is what we all have been hoping for. Every year, the U.S. Soccer Federation and the U.S. Open Cup Committee goes out there to make this tournament special, to make this tournament what it is and what it should be. And that is why we all love this game in the country. Like I've always said, I know you have a heart when it comes to the game outside of the United States, whether it's in Europe or South America or Africa or Asia or maybe in somewhere in the South Pacific. But if you make some room for your club that's in your own backyard, you support them to the hilt, you yell for them, you fight for them, you scream and everything, including our national team, and you know what? You've done the right job. And you love this Open Cup. You want to see the Open Cup thrive, survive, and just be fantastic. My guests, whether they were able to come on live or through a recording, they've proven to you why this Open Cup means that much. And just to go back to what Cesar Diaz was saying with the Cosmos and the Red Bulls, you know, being from the Northeast, and I don't know, maybe it's different for certain people. Maybe it's different for how you guys follow the game. And obviously, it, you know, even as a supporter, you know, this is a results-driven situation. And I'm telling you right now, telling you guys right now, if you think there is no jawing away when it comes to soccer here in the New York City area, the tri-state area of northern New Jersey, southern Connecticut, and New York City, you are sadly mistaken. I'm telling you now, everyone is jawing away. Even though New York City FC has not started play yet, they have started to jaw away, those fans. They don't have a team yet, but they're going. They're trying to make some noise. They're trying to go out there and to prove that they belong in the spotlight just as much as the Cosmos do and the Red Bulls do. And now you have it right here. You have it in the fourth round. It's finally happened. New York versus New York. And I don't care about, well, you know, you're really in New Jersey. No, you're not in the five boroughs. You're actually on Long Island. It really doesn't matter, because the people that live in this area, in the five boroughs, Long Island, Westchester County, Rockland County, northern New Jersey, Bergen County, and anywhere points west, this is all New York. Southern Connecticut, near the border, or just along the New England Thruway, it doesn't matter, because everyone knows where everyone goes, New York. There will always be debate. There will always be wise asses. There will always be big mouths. And no matter which side it's coming from, there's going to be arguments going all over the place. Out of left field, right field, in the back, up front, somewhere in the middle, along the sidelines. Everybody has an opinion on how, what, where, when, and why it's going to happen. You're talking about baseball in New York City. Yankee fans always jawing away with Met fans and the vice versa. Jets fans jawing away with Giants fans and vice versa. Nets, because now they're in Brooklyn, now they're talking against the Knicks. The New York Rangers, an original six team in the National Hockey League, and the New York Islanders, even though they've won four consecutive cups in the 80s, early 80s, still jawing away. Still jawing away. You need to know. You need to know that it's going to blow up. In fact, right now it's a rumble. It's a little bit of a rumble. But when the date gets closer and closer and closer, it's going to explode. It's not just fireworks. It's not just fireworks. Cannonballs, cannons, bazookas, grenades. If you think there's a lot of jawing going on when you have the two Manchester football teams going out with each other, the London derbies going on with each other, the Liverpool derby going on with each other, the Sheffield derbies, whatever derbies it is in England. While that has been going on a lot longer than this little rivalry, I guarantee you it's going to be a lot louder, a lot more pushier, going to be fun. If this is what everyone was hoping for, you got your wish, and you're going to get it big time. Believe me, I should know. I'm from New York, and that's the truth. I want to thank my guests for tonight. I want to thank, of course, Ryan Martin in Atlanta, the Jorgen Sommer in Indianapolis, Brendan Doherty up in Rochester, my good buddy Cesar Diaz, Paul Shaw in Orlando, and, of course, James Hope in San Antonio. Round three review show is at an end. Get ready for round four. There will be 1 hour instead of two because of the Open Cup. Excuse me, because of the World Cup. And then we go back to 2 hours for the first ever fifth round review show on that Friday. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. thank you very much for listening tonight. I always appreciate you taking the time to listen to these shows. And as always, please, I beg of you, to enjoy your football. Join me on June the 3rd as we get ready for the CONCACAF Champions League group draw review show with John Jagu. Have a good night. Thank you very much. Enjoy your weekend, everyone. USA Turkey on Sunday, the review show. Bye-bye for now.